Greetings, cinephiles. Are you looking for a movie analysis podcast that stands above the rest? Then look no further than Collateral Cinema, the only movie podcast that matters.
We analyze good movies, we analyze bad movies, and yes, we also analyze the in-betweens of the world of cinema.
So if you like what you hear, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And yes, my friends, we are 420 friendly. So when you listen to us,
smoke it if you've got it.
And now, here's a new episode of Collateral Gaming. The show starts right now.
I'm Ashley Chancellor.
I'm Andrew Orozco.
And this is Collateral Gaming with
Geek News Now and the DuoSense podcast.
Welcome to Collateral Gaming, the only video game podcast that matters, where we focus on good games, bad games, and everything else in between in the world of gaming. We are podcasting straight from Houston, Texas, and yes, my friends, we are a 420-friendly podcast, so whatever you have, be it bongs, blunts, or joints, smoke it if you've got it. Joining us for the second time is Mr. Andrew Orozco from Geek News Now and the DuoSense podcast. How's it going, man?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Me too, bro. Me too. I've been looking forward to this game ever since I played the last one. So today we are talking about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. As this is a game launch review, this will be a spoiler-free discussion. So if you have not completed the game, don't worry. Neither have we. I can't promise there won't be spoilers for the 27-year-old game it's based on, though.
I think that's kind of fair. You've had 27 years to play. Of course, if you're younger, then you know. I'm sorry. You were just born at the wrong time, I guess.
Hey, man, I'll be 29 this year, and I've played it. So,
I played it for the first time. The OG. I played it when I was 16, and I'm 33 now. So. Yeah, about 17 years ago, yeah.
So, yeah, I actually played both Final Fantasy VII and Remake kind of concurrently. We did it, I think, last season on the podcast, or maybe it was the season before that. I feel like it was at least a year or two ago. But, yeah, I actually played both of these games for the first time and fell absolutely in love with both of them.
That must have been weird, though. Was it weird for you? Because you're like, oh, like the game's over, but I'm still on disc one over here on the PS1 version.
Well, like I knew how far it went into, and I knew that Remake was just going to be the Midgar section of the game. Right. And I think I mostly played all the way through one at a time. I mean, like, I started the original, and then I started Remake, and then I mostly played all the way through the original, and then I played all the way through Remake, and then I went back and finished. So I kind of hopped between them. But yeah, man, I was just absolutely impressed. Even though it's a PS1 game with graphics that a lot would call dated by today's standards.
Yeah. I think of all three PS1 Final Fantasy games, 7 is the it hasn't aged as well as 8 and 9 on there. It's you have to use a lot of your imagination to kind of fill in the gaps of what's going on and what you're seeing. You see like these little like almost Minecraft looking cubicle characters, and right. You're looking at these characters and you're like you see Cloud walking around and he just has like a cube for a hand. And you know your mind kind of you have to work a little bit harder to kind of immerse yourself. I think you kind of have to just kind of like suspend your disbelief a little bit playing that game.
100%, I agree with that. And you know, it was a different time too. I mean, a lot of games you kind of had to use your imagination for up to that point. But one thing that Final Fantasy VII managed to do was resonate emotionally with me, despite the outdated graphics and whatnot. And as far as I'm concerned, I feel like the gameplay itself holds up today.
Yeah. I mean, it's classic turn-based RPG. You have the little ATB bar filling in, so it's like it's not completely turn-based,
right?
But you do have like, yeah, like you have it's. I think that's true in that regard. The combat has held up well because it's just they didn't get too crazy with it. It's a very traditional turn-based RPG, so like the skeleton is there, and then like whatever, you know, the graphics aside, like the gameplay still makes sense, still solid. Limit breaks. Okay, select this. You do that. Oh, you're using Tifas. Okay, jackpot. Try to get hit. Like, uh-huh. It works pretty well. Like, even though it just looks kind of funky, like, I think the gameplay is probably the gameplay and the story are the two things that have aged well the most of that game.
100%, I agree. And what Remake managed to do was take that and translate it into a modern game. And some people were unhappy that it's not a one for one remake, but I for one am happy to see. This new take on it, and honestly, just a game with modern conventions. And I have argued before that I felt like the combat system in Remake and Rebirth is a perfect blend of that like old school turn based type combat and real time action. And I feel like it blends those particularly well. It's one of the better combat systems, more satisfying and fun ones that I've played in a while.
Yeah, I agree. I think. Because I was one of those people, like when I heard like the remake that was original back at the E3 when they showed it off, and I was one of those people hooting and hollering. And then I was wondering too, I'm like they're gonna keep the system the same, right? They gotta keep the combat system the same. And then when they gradually revealed it, yeah, it's not gonna be the same, I was like crestfallen. I was like, no, like don't, why are you doing this action? We already have Kingdom Hearts, we got Final Fantasy 15, why are you doing this action RPG hybrid? But honestly, like you said, actually, like playing it, like I feel like you do get the best of both worlds. Like you're doing you're fighting against a normal mob. I don't really think too hard. I just swing away, like I'm playing like a traditional action RPG. And then when I get to a boss, then it's me like jumping from character to character, make sure, okay, you fill up the ATB bar and like, okay, use this ability. Oh, let me jump to this other character now. And it feels much more that traditional kind of micromanaging system of like the old school Final Fantasy VII. So you do get to have, there's moments where that shines and you're able to kind of relive that, so to speak, where, you know, oh, you cast Cure, then, oh, this person, you're going to use your Limit Break, all that. And like, you're just kind of jumping around. Because if you just play statically as one character, like, you're not going to do very well in those boss battles.
Right. No, exactly. I agree with that. And like, I think that was what appealed to me most as well, was that there's this sort of tactical edge to combat. I mean, yeah, you could just press square a lot, but that's not going to work once you get to the more difficult boss fights, or if you're playing the game on hard mode.
Are you playing it on hard mode?
I'm not. Actually, okay, I'm
on normal.
Actually, I'm on dynamic.
Which is that one?
So that is where like the enemies scale up with you.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I just have it on normal, I believe, whichever is the second easiest one.
I usually go for normal. I played through Remake on normal. But what I appreciate about Rebirth, properly get into this game and what it does, is the number of additions to combat that they've added. I mean, you've got like the synergy skills and the synergy mm-hmm. abilities now. Which really gives you even more to do. I mean, what Remake did so well was it took the ATB system from Final Fantasy VII, and instead of you waiting for the gauges to fill, you actually attacked while you were doing it. So it gave you something to do. And now Rebirth expands on that and offers more ways to fill up the gauge more quickly. And I liked using the synergy skills, the ones that you where you hold down R1 and then you pull the other characters come in. Like I thought that was really cool.
Oh, I forgot what it's called. It's like back order, back something, back. Yeah. The ones that are not in your current party, right?
Oh no. That's another cool feature. The fact that they have like the back. I forget what they called it too, but like you have like your back stock of enemies or party members that can pop in whenever you're not doing so well.
Oh, I thought you were talking about that one. Okay,
but no, I mean just mean the synergy skills.
I don't understand how. I'm supposed to. I know how to use them. I just don't know when. Like, because I'll go through the options and see synergy skills, and like they're usually grayed out. And I'm just like, I don't know what I have to do to make them available. Like, do I have to be like almost dying? Because it seems like they only become available kind of like your limit. Like, they only become really available like when in a very like dire situation. Like,
I was confused at first too, but there's actually two different abilities. There's synergy skills and there's synergy abilities. So the ones you're talking about, the ones that are gray, those are the synergy abilities. Those actually, to answer your question, I believe you get those up as you just perform more actions in combat. So the abilities that actually contribute to synergy are like they have like a little icon next to them. And so when you use those those abilities or actions, they trigger the bar to go up. But the more you use synergy abilities with a certain character, the longer it takes to fill the next time.
I see. Okay. So, yeah, I see some of the skills have like a little green dot next to them. Is that what you're talking about? They have like a little... There's like a little like icon next to certain abilities.
Well, the ones that have the dot, those, I think that just means that like that's a new ability or that's one that you're still that you're still becoming proficient in.
Okay.
Or one that you haven't used before.
Yeah, actually that makes more sense now.
Every like when you select an ability, like when you hover over it, there's like it has the description on the bottom and then there's a couple of icons next to it that'll indicate things like whether it's airborne. Or whether, you know,
or here's an extra ATB bar.
Yeah. And there's one of the icons is just like a bar, and that indicates that it actually contributes to your synergy. But the synergy skills don't require any ATB, and you can use them immediately at all times. In fact, neither one of them use ATB, but the synergy skills, you just hold down R1 and you hit the face buttons. And they'll do things like
I've been playing that wrong.
Really? Yeah, man, because they're super useful, but they're easy to forget about. But they'll help you build your ATB gauge up quickly, and they cost nothing to use, and they deal a little bit of damage. So, like, you can do like ranged attacks, or you can do like kind of like a dodge and counter move.
I see those when you're doing the
guarding.
When you see on the, for lack of a better term, like the sphere grid that they have in this game, where it's kind of like the little, when you go to the book person, right? You have the book person and like they show you like the little like links of what this and that. I'll look at some of these descriptions and it's like, oh, like dodge and then counter this. But I'm like, well, when am I going to dodge and counter if I have to like fill in the thing? But like, okay, that makes way more sense now. Okay. There's like a whole aspect of the game of the combat that I haven't even been fully utilizing, I guess.
Yeah. It actually adds like another depth to it. And I was also impressed by how quickly you can switch between parties in the overworld. You know, in the original, you had to be specifically on the overworld. Like, you couldn't be in any region. And you had to open the pause menu up, and then you had to move your party around. And in this game, pretty much anywhere except for certain story-locked sections, you have three custom teams you can set up. They have to include Cloud. But other than just like the original, but other than that, you know, you can set up three quick teams. Of course, you know, I had to set up my main one with, you know, my two girls.
Oh, okay.
My harem.
My main one that I rely on is Barret and Tifa, because I like having Barret for the long range, because I just love using the just holding down the trigger, just holding down square and unload. And I'll have him do the, I try to do the move where it takes up the two ATB charges, the maximum, I forget what it's called.
Maximum
Fury?
There you go.
Yeah, that's right. Maximum Fury. And once he does that, then I'll switch to like Tifa or Cloud. I like Tifa because I just like the way she handles. She feels good just, you know, with the punching and everything. I love how like nimble she is.
Yeah, she's fast and she hits hard.
She hits hard. I like her, the different combinations, the overdrive and the impulse or the different, just, I just like the whole, like her style of just like acrobatics and gymnastics, like the fighting style. And then I'll go back to Cloud. Like everybody use up their moves, go back to Cloud and rinse and repeat and just do that cycle over and over.
Nice. I find myself using Cloud too much, honestly, because like I'll order the other members to use their abilities as their gauges fill. But I almost always main Cloud up until the point that Yuffie came in. And now Yuffie might be my favorite party member.
Yuffie's fun, yeah. I think it kind of helped, too, that she had that whole DLC, like, to herself, where they were able to, like, really introduce, like, the ninjutsu and the elemental stuff and the switching and, like, all that stuff just translating to Rebirth. Like, and I feel like they kind of made it a little bit tighter. Like, I think they made it a little better for her, but, like, Yuffie is, aside from Cloud, I think Yuffie is the most fun, and I think, to use, and I think that's kind of because she did have her own, like, separate side story kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I actually have not played the Yuffie DLC. in remake, but I did watch a playthrough of it. At the time, I didn't have a PS5, so I just had to watch a playthrough, and I just haven't had a chance to check it out. But Rebirth was actually my first time being able to play as Yuffie, and I remembered some of the mechanics of her character that I watched in the playthrough, but it was all fresh as far as, you know, what it feels like. And I just love that you can basically exploit enemy weaknesses anytime. Like, you don't have to have a specific materia equipped or whatever. She has access to all of them, and she's fast, and she can do both melee and ranged. She's just a great character. Although, you know, Tifa's my waifu, so.
Yeah, Tifa's a lot of fun to play as well, yeah.
I mean, and Tifa's the one I'm going for, you know, for my Golden Saucer date. And I'm glad that there's at least, like, an indicator now of your affection points or whatever.
I got Tifa for that unintentionally. I wasn't really trying for a specific character, and it just ended up working out that way because they were all more or less like tied. By the time I got to there, like, they were all tied.
Yeah.
Like, her, Aerith, and Barrett. I don't know if you have enough time to get Yuffie to get there at that point because you just don't have as much time with her as the other ones. I imagine there's some way you could do that. But yeah, Yuffie was like the lowest for me because she was so fresh at that point. So, but yeah, I got Tifa unintentionally for some reason. Like, it was a 3-way tie and the game gave me Tifa. I'm like, all right.
I'm Team Tifa all the way, you know, as far as the canon concerned. Cloud and Tifa fucked under the high wind. That is canon. And I mean, no diss to Aerith. I think she's cute and all, but I just, you know, Tifa, I think, is the one I feel like the most resonance with their relationship. I don't know. Sometimes Aerith feels almost a little bit forceful. Like, in the beginning of the game, she's like, hey, let's go on a date. And I'm like, bro, I did not agree to this. And then she goes and she tells Tifa right in front of her. She's like, oh, we went on a date. Like, fuck you.
I mean, yeah, I feel like Aerith has always been coded as Zack's girl, right? Zack is her real, true, like, love. And Cloud's kind of just the runner-up, like, well, I guess you're here kind of guy.
Well, and there's a good story reason for that, right? If you played the original. And, you know, I think that she likes Cloud because of Zack. And honestly, one of the things I noticed about playing this game that was interesting when I played through, like, the Nibelheim section was how upfront they are with certain things. And I think it's not an accident that Square released the Crisis Core remaster before Rebirth.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
I think they want players to play through the actual version of events and notice the discrepancies right away and notice little things like, wait a second, why is Cloud talking and, you know, his mannerisms and the
He's
way he
way
talks.
More outgoing. Why is he doing squats?
Right. These are questions. And even, like, Tifa kind of comes right out the gate. It's in the trailer, too. You know, like, as far as I'm concerned, Cloud wasn't in Nibelheim 5 years ago. I don't think that they revealed that so early on in the original game.
No.
So they're already teasing it. And I think that that's one difference that they're making with this adaptation. Of course, the question on everybody's mind is Aerith going to die?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's like 14. I think there's 14 chapters. So I think there's 14 chapters in the game, and I'm on 9, so I'm like a little past the halfway point. But I'm wondering that too. I'm wondering just because of, like, if you played Remake, there's like apparently, you know, you can be spared from death, like, if it's for plot armor reasons, right? Literal, like, manifested plot armor.
Right, because, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, I guess it's kind of like the TVA with the sacred timeline kind of thing. It's like the whispers just make it happen because that's supposed to happen.
Exactly.
and that was really interesting, and I'm interested to see where they go with this, because my initial predictions were that they're just going to go completely off the rails here at the end, leaving the threequel to be something, you know, completely uncharted territory. But a lot of people feel, or at least felt up until the game coming out. Now it's out. I don't know how what happens, but, you know, a lot of people felt that Aerith was still gonna die, that they were gonna, you know, kind of subvert our expectations somewhat. Like, okay, so you think that there might be some changes, but, you know, still hit us with that. Because I feel like if Aerith doesn't die, then somebody else has to die in place of her, right?
Yeah. I would rather not have that happen, just because, I don't know, I'm attached to the... I mean...
I'm so attached to all the characters. It's like, who would exactly. I prefer to die?
And I'm okay with Aerith dying, because I go in knowing that that's probably the most likely event. So I don't... I'm like, okay, I'm not going to, you know, invest... there's always that joke about, like... I've seen memes with the original Final Fantasy VII where it's like... people don't bother investing anything in Aerith because they know what's going to happen to her. So, like, she's always under-leveled, or she doesn't get the best gear or whatever because you know what's going to happen. So, there's no point. And so, like, that's not the same here. Like, I still, like, if she's in my party, I try to get her, like, the best stuff. But I have the mentality of, like, it's probably going to happen again. So, don't, like, invest, like, don't invest over resources, or, like, really, you know, like, I want to max out the little sphere grid thing. Like, my God. Seems like kind of a waste for her, maybe. Like, I don't know if we're gonna invest that much in her, like, you know. So, I don't know.
Yeah, but that's fair. I mean, you know, like, yeah. I honestly feel like the good thing is that Rebirth offers. I think the way that characters level up is, you know, instead of having like a shared pool of resources, you know, like each character can kind of individually power up, at least with the folios, as far as the folios are concerned.
What they're called. I was trying to remember what they're called. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you know, you're kind of incentivized to let each character, like, reach their potential. And I kind of try to play to their archetypes, you know, like what those characters are best used for. Cloud's an all-rounder. Like, you can kind of do whatever you want with him. But for me, I like to focus on the magic skills, because I think as far in terms of, like, magic attack and overall magic power, he's second only to Aerith. So he has, you know, and honestly, I just like magic type attacks in these types of games. So my Cloud is a little bit more mage focused. But Cloud's kind of cool that you can kind of put him in any direction. But, you know, Barret is the tank. That's what he is. You know, Aerith is the healer. And Tifa is, I mean, if she had a class, I think she'd be a monk.
Yeah, she would be a monk. I don't know stat why. I guess HP and attack would be the main thing, but she would definitely fit the monk archetype.
But what was cool about both the original Final Fantasy VII and Remake and Rebirth is that, you know, you can kind of play with the characters a little bit. They don't have strict classes. You know, you can kind of, every character can cast spells, you know.
Right.
So yes, you can play characters to certain strengths, but you know, you could basically do whatever you wanted. I feel like in Remake and Rebirth, there's a little bit of a harder focus on the characters' individual strengths. And so it's less of the cases in the original where, like, anybody could be pretty much anything. But there still is a great degree of freedom, you know, and that goes down to the materia system.
Yeah, I like how you're not, like, pigeonholed too much into you having to have specific material on you at all times, because you have the abilities that do have some elemental, like, affiliation. For example, I always have the assess material with me. Always have to have the assess material, right?
Right.
And I'll scan like a boss or whatever enemy, or if it's like just a tougher enemy, I'm like, you know what, let me figure out like what's the most optimal way of dealing with this, and I'll check and I'll look for like elemental weaknesses, and it's like, dang, like I don't have Blizzard material on everybody, but they all have some kind of ice associated ability, you know, under their ability section, and it's not going to be as strong as an actual like cast Blizzard, but it's going to be enough to just pressure or just put up that little bar a little bit. So like, it's like, okay, well, we don't have the material we need. Maybe one person does. I'll just spam Blizzard with that one person, but everybody else can still use, I think it's like wind chill. I think it's called, or something like that.
Wind current. Just, you
know, wind
or air current. One of the two.
I think, yeah, air current's the one for like the wind element, but there's like icy chill or some kind of, or maybe
Icy impulse.
Yeah. There you go. For Barret, I think it's Ice Impulse, and I think for Cloud, it's called something else. But they all have something that can contribute to the the weakness. So I'll just, and then, like, you know, when you send them, like, they'll make the enemies just bounce for a little bit, just keep them up in the air, and get on pressure. Like, okay, cool, we got it. Like, because about like around chapter 8 or 7, they start to introduce like big, bulkier regular mobs, like just bulkier regular enemies. It's like, oh, you can't attack this creature or whatever from the front, like, okay, like they always like you have to, like, because you'll get that block animation and say to go around, or like, or you can attack them, but you have to break their armor first with like an element or something. It's like, okay, well, let me do that. And so, like, I like how it's not like, oh, I didn't go in with every single material equipped, like, I'm not completely screwed.
Yeah, and like you, I was appreciative of the fact that every character now has elemental abilities that you unlock via their folio, so that you don't have to keep that materia equipped all the time. You know, in Remake and in the original game, I found myself constantly switching materia up, pausing and opening. And one thing I think I liked about Remake was that it emulated the original in that sense for me, was that there was a huge strategic component. But it does get old after a while whenever, you know, you're jumping into a fight. And I like that there's a handy retry battle option that lets you go back to right before so you can switch up your materia. But it feels much less necessary to constantly switch up your materia now. What I basically do is, I mean, the default arrangement had a specific materia equipped to each character. And then, you know, as you unlock their abilities, you can kind of just rely on that. And so, you know, I would have my one character who would have the right spell for that, and I would let them use the spell, but everybody else can just use that secondary ability. And then sometimes that ability is useful because it actually hits multiple enemies, or it grants some sort of buff, you know. And
I'll notice that sometimes if enemies are close enough, you can actually hit them with a non-area spell. You'll hit both of them occasionally.
Yeah, but I appreciate it that, like, there was a lot more, it was just easier to exploit enemy weaknesses and not having to constantly switch up your materia setup. And then once you get to, like, the important fights, you know, like the boss fights, that's whenever it's, you know, you're going to want to really kind of tailor your materia setup based on the battle. And like you, I always have Assess equipped, although that's why I found the Assess earrings handy. You no longer have to waste a materia slot on it.
Yeah, I think I might go back to using those, because I took off the earrings because I put in the auto life one, the earrings that give you like auto life for a particular boss, and I just forgot to go back and change it afterward till right now. I was like, oh yeah, I should change those back. But yeah, there's the only issue I see, and I sometimes forget to do it, is when the game forces you to have a particular party, then I do have to go in just to switch the material for the summons. Because those don't seem to, like, automatically, like, transfer over. You have to go manually. Because they come with, like, a bunch of stat boosts and stuff and being able to use a summon. So, like, when the game does force me to change parties, I'll go straight to the menu. Like, okay, let me put all the summon material back onto these people over here.
Yeah, whenever there's something like a party switch, then, yeah, I'm definitely going to go in and touch up my materia setup. Because, you know, if, for instance, Cloud is locked out of that section, you know, I'm not going to have that materia that I always use in every battle, like Assess or the enemy skill. I mean, the enemy skills you want to keep on. That way, you know, you could learn new enemy skills. Although, do you actually have to have the materia equipped now? Because I think you get the enemy skills through the combat simulator now.
Oh, okay. I don't have that material, so I'm guessing you do get it through the combat simulator, because I don't have that material. I find Chadley so annoying. I don't like doing anything. I don't like interacting with him whatsoever. He's just the most annoying. And wow. Then they added a new one, like his sister now. It's like, oh God, they doubled down now.
And she doesn't just shut the fuck up. Like, I've already heard your spiel once. I mean, I get like, like, once I've completed the battle at least once and I'm retrying for the optional objectives, it should not talk over combat.
Oh, those like little 3-star battles or whatever that you find in the open world?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, those are I have a hard time doing the like specific ones where it's like, oh, like pressure this enemy, because I usually just end up killing the enemy before I even get to that part. And right. So having to do those, I only did some of those and I'm like, okay, I'm not doing this anymore because it's just not fun. What I found really, I don't know if you want to get into this, but one of my favorite things in the game so far is the mini game, and that is Queen's Blood.
Oh, hell yeah.
That game is so much fun. I love it. I wish that was a real card game, dude. It's so much fun.
Oh, man. And see, I just got finished my playthrough of The Witcher 3, so I've been I was playing the hell out of Gwent, and now we have Queen's Blood, and Queen's Blood is the tits, man. I'm having a blast with it. And there's that little Queen's Blood tournament during the boat section.
Yeah.
And I was going hard, man. I was having a blast with it, and I'm like trying to like build up my decks now and actually get all the cards. Like at first I was I'm not really that interested in it yet. I'll check it out later. So like I missed some of the opportunities in Calm to get like powerful cards. And so I was having a difficult time later. So but then I come back to Calm you know, in a later chapter. And I'm like, okay, so like this is where you're supposed to get those cards, and you can build up really powerful decks and try out new strategies. And it's just such an intricate mini game, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, there was every time I go to like a new region or I find a new merchant, like instead of buying like health and weapons, I go like, do they have a new pack of cards?
Let me
go
check first.
I'll buy a new pack of cards. And I always get excited when I go to a new region and it's like, oh, like new Queen's Blood, like you know, opponents are like, yes, like let's get into it. There's a really fun section later on where like it's not mandatory, but it's like you need to complete a certain objective, and there's three ways to go about it. And one of the ways is a Queen's Blood, like, mini tournament, smaller than the boat one. And I was like, okay, we're doing that. We're doing that way. We're going that way.
So, fuck yeah. Yeah. I think I'll do the same. See, I'm on chapter 7 right now in the Corral area.
Okay. Yeah, you're almost there. Almost to the part I'm talking about. But, dude, that game is just so fun. And then, like, they add, like, new elements later on where, like, you can, like, get rid of certain cards off the board, like, to put new cards or, like... Like, yeah. It's very, like, it unfolds in a manner where, like... When I first saw it, I was like, oh, I hate... Like, I don't really like most games where they have mini games. Like, okay, here's how this works. And it's like, oh, like, this is going to be such a, like, a chore. Like, I just want to get back to fighting.
Right.
But, like, making it, like, collectible, like, it's so similar to my other favorite one, which is Triple Triad in Final Fantasy VIII, because I love Triple Triad. And that's basically what this is a card collecting sim within the game. And just, like, putting them on the board and just, like, coming up with combos or... I for the most part, I like how you have the mulligan thing where you can, like oh, you get a bad hand. Like, in most real card games, like, that's... You're stuck like that. But, like oh, you can get rid of these three, like, cards you won't need till later. Like, oh, okay, cool. Let me switch them out and stuff. And then, for the most part, I can figure out... Because each opponent plays differently. I noticed, like, there are certain ones that will rush to fill up the board with, like, low level, but they'll try to take all your spaces, like, right away. And it's like, okay.
Right.
So, like, if I fail, I'm like, okay, I know what to do this time. And I'll go back and I'll just try to rush the board before they do or something. And then there's other characters who just focus on, like, they'll stay in one corner of the board, but they have, like, cards that, like, you know, like, there's synergy where they just power up each other. And, like, and it's like, oh, man, like, okay, I need to come up with a new strategy. And I'll go... Like, lose, try again, go back and change the cards and stuff. I'm like, okay, let me try this combination. And it's like, it's a mini game, but it's almost like another game unto itself. Like, it feels like a whole other, like, I could play this on my phone or something kind of thing. Like, a whole other, like, idle card game or something. It's just, it's really fun. And I also love how everybody in the world of the game is into this one game. Yes. Everyone's, like, really into this.
A lot of people were complaining about, you know, some of the mini games, but everybody loves fucking Queen's Blood. You mean like in world though?
In world, yeah. In world,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
everyone's like, from like Shinra executives to like regular people.
Yes,
like, it's like there's a whole conflict going on. But like, hey, do you got time for a card game? Like,
well, see, man, like, see, you would like. I think we talked about this before. You said you haven't played The Witcher 3.
I have it. I have it, but I just know it's a very long game. And I just haven't made time for it.
Yeah, so the Gwent is pretty much the equivalent to that, and Gwent got so popular that Gwent became a standalone game. There's a standalone
game. Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah,
and then there's even a mobile version. I have it, but I've never tried it. And so like they could totally do that with Queen's Blood. Like it is so addictive. Really, it's another thing that adds to this like pseudo open world, which we haven't talked about. Yeah, because I felt like that was what really blew me away, was they took Remake and they made it like semi-open world. Like every time you get to a new area, and this will be during the war, there'll be like more open chapters. And I noticed, you know, Remake had a few chapters like that, but this really doubles down on it and just completely opens up. And you can go in and you can find the towers that reveal part of the map.
Yeah.
And you know, fight powerful enemies or
find,
you know,
this little like Mako live stream shrine kind of thing and get some materials there. Or, oh, like you unlock this thing now, you scan this, now you can fight this summon in like the VR thing or whatever.
Yeah, and also you can make the summon fights easier because, I mean, that's integral to getting new summons is you have to fight them in the combat sim. And they're really difficult battles usually when you first unlock them, but by activating the crystals, you can make those fights easier, and it will also power up the materia once you've obtained it. So you can like fully power up those summons. And I got some of the bonuses actually with the, because I know they give you Chocobo Moogle and Leviathan, and I think Ramu if you completed the inner grade DLC, which I didn't, but I got the other two.
Oh, just, okay. Yeah, I did complete Integrate, but I don't remember. I know at the beginning when I first booted up the game, it said like, oh, like this thing has been added or whatever, but I skipped it so quickly that I don't remember what I think it was that. Because I saw I had like the summon or whatever for like the Moogles. There's like three of them, I think, or something like that, some kind of Moogle summon. And I kind of just completely just pushing X to get the game started. And I think I just like brushed through everything real quick. So I didn't see exactly where that was. But yeah, touching back on what you said about how Remake is much more like kind of, it reminds me of Final Fantasy 13, where it's very narrow, like very corridor like, right? Because you have to go through these specific story beats and you're getting introduced to the characters and the conflict. And then Rebirth just allows you to just, okay, we know everybody, like, bam, throw you into the open world. And like, It's like you said, it's like semi, it's like more like open area kind of rather than open world, but like
right.
You have these self-contained regions and you go and you see like there's like actual side quests to do. And I mean, Remake had some side quests, but they were very much smaller. They weren't like really, you know, they kind of served the purpose of like the main story where it was like, you know, go find this character and here's some potions or something, right? Very similar. Like I remember like in the slums, like, go fight these rats, like very basic, you know, kind of like side quests here. And here we have like side quests that have like, I mean, I haven't played The Witcher 3, but what I hear a lot, but I'm familiar with like, Cyberpunk, which is another CD Projekt Red game. And like, there's a lot of stories or a lot of side quests that are just as entertaining as like the main story. And
yeah,
and Rebirth kind of has that, and not to the same degree as like a CD Projekt game. But it but like you do have these little splitting off stories, these little like side quests that kind of lead to another story. And there is like like when you meet like the whole thing with like the Choco Billy and his sister, and it's like, oh, like, well, you know, what's happened to our parents? And like, and that's like a separate side quest going on from like the main quest. You're just trying to cross this swamp, but there's like all these other side quests related to like the Choco Bills and all that stuff, right? So like, I do enjoy how there is much more to do. But I do find that as the further I get into the game, I'm starting to do less and less side quests. Because at this point, I really just want to know what happens at the end of the game. So it's nice to have that extra stuff, though, to kind of like, you know, grind for experience or materials or stuff.
Right. And the side quests, which I think they call odd jobs in this one, each of them will actually also deepen your relationship with certain characters. So I'm actually being kind of strategic about the way I take those on. I'm trying to keep Tifa in the lead at all times. So I'm not completing the odd jobs that are specific to characters until I feel like Tifa's comfortably well ahead of them, that I won't get somebody else ahead of her. Like, I'm really trying hard, man. Like, I had to tell Yuffie, she's like, do I have a bodacious bod? And I'm like, nope. But she's also like 16, so I think I would have said nope anyway, because just nope.
In my head canon, I would love for Cloud to say something positive. What would that be? I'm trying to imagine, like, in his voice. There's a really funny, and I don't know if it's a major spoiler or not. I don't think it is, but like where she basically Yuffie introduces herself to the party, and she has like this big old like cinematic with like background effects and fireworks, and Cloud's just like, cool, and he just walks away.
Yes, cool. He is so snappy and hilarious in these games. Like, I really feel like they took like the edgy boy we knew in the original and just like made him three-dimensional. Like, I like that moment in Remake where like Barrett's like, you trying to say you can't hear it crying?
Oh,
you can actually hear that?
Oh, early on.
Damn right I can. Get help.
Yeah. Like during the bombing mission. Yeah, I remember.
Yes, like the relationships between these characters is so great too, and it deepens even further. I mean, this is where we see the characters at the conclusion of Remake. So they've already started, you know, to form bonds and whatnot. But then, you know, you add more people into the mix. We get to finally see Red 13 in a little bit more detail, and of course, you know, like he was in Remake, but he didn't get to play as him, and we didn't really know a whole lot about him. So, and then Yuffie comes in, of course, and I believe Ketshi, and I'm going to pronounce it that way because I refuse to accept Kate Sith. And I know that that's like the canonical pronunciation now, and that pisses me off because it's a Gaelic name. It's supposed to be Ketshi.
Right.
In fact, the Japanese, the katakana is Ketoshi, which is an emulation of that. So Kate Sith was literally just Square pandering to people that called it that for years because they didn't know better.
I'm one of those people where my head it because if you play, I mean, in other Final Fantasy games, there is characters and enemies that are spelled the same way as like the Ketchi, as you say, but like. As a kid, I didn't know any better. It was just Kate Sith to me. Like that's I see Sith. I think Star Wars. You see Kate like cat. Okay, cat. And I think that's what you see Kate. Like C-A-I-T, and you think like, oh, it's a cat. So it's a cat like with an I in it. So it's cat with an I. So it's so you just you know at your you know elementary grade school thinking you're gonna think okay it's Kate and Sith like Star Wars. So that I can spell that way. So that's how I pronounce it. But it wasn't until much later. Yeah, much later I read like I think it was like some. A Game Informer or some article where someone's like put like the you know when they put the spelling in parentheses like how you're supposed to say it, I'm like, right. Oh, that's nowhere close to what it's spelled like. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I was saying it wrong.
Well, and like the way you pronounce it is the way anybody would. It's the way I pronounced it the first time I saw the word spelled because like I've seen it in other places, right?
You're right.
But you know, but it's an actual folklore story and I think Gaelic mythology or Celtic.
Is it a cat, though? Even in mythology, is it like a type of cat or something?
Yeah, it is a type of cat. In fact, I think, you know, there's probably like an etymological, you know, like shared ancestor with cat and ket. You know, they're pretty close. It's supposed to be Ketchi. I guess Kate Sith is fine. Technically, that's the official pronunciation now. And like you said, that's how everybody spelled it the first time they saw it. How would you know better unless you looked it up? I just happened to look it up.
But like I think Bahamut is supposed to be pronounced Bahamut. And well, they say is Bahamut.
They
like,
say Bahamut in Final Fantasy 16, so that's what I'm going with.
But I've heard it like in other like non-Final Fantasy because it's a word that comes from like I don't know if it has its origin like in pagan stuff or something like that, but it's like Bahamut, like the U is like the ooh, not the sound. So like it's pronouncing it like Ifrit, supposed to be Ifrit, right? Like how you say it in 16, Ifrit. But it's Ifrit like in every other Final Fantasy, like even in the ones where there's actually voice acting, it's that they say Ifrit, and it's like okay, like it changes based on who's saying it, I guess. So
it's not even consistent. And apparently it's Mako. The first time I read it in Final Fantasy 16 in Final Fantasy 7, it was I read it as Mako, but then I played Remake and they said Mako and I was like, okay, so I guess it's Mako.
I don't even remember how you pronounce it, but I know for sure the first time I heard that was in Advent Children and they say Mako. They hate saying Mako a lot.
Advent Children says it too. Yeah.
So early on, I learned it wasn't like Mako. I'm like, okay. I think I saw Advent Children within a month or 2 months of finishing the original Final Fantasy VII. So it kicked out like a lot of the bad habits pretty quickly.
Yeah. I appreciated that. I felt like the voice actors that they used in Remake and Rebirth closely emulated the performances in Advent Children. They were pretty close.
Some I thought were actually the same ones. And I looked it up like, oh, no, it's a different actor. But they sound very like I forget the actor's name who does Cloud here. But he sounds a lot like Steve Bloom does in Advent Children. Like very, very similar. But I feel also that's also because they got the same. The Cloud in Advent Children is also voiced by the same Cloud in Kingdom Hearts. So like a lot of those voices kind of just stay the same. Like Mandy Moore as Aerith in both Advent Children and also in Kingdom Hearts 2. And so like. Those are like the official in my head canon. Those are like the official voices, but these other like from Remake and Rebirth are so similar that I sometimes can't really tell the difference. I'm like, they did really good with the voice casting.
Yeah, and didn't they use the guy that actually plays Jet as Barrett in
Jet from Final Fantasy 10?
No, Jet from Cowboy Bebop.
Oh yeah. As a Barrett in this one? I don't think so.
I think in Advent Children or one of them, I feel like they used him.
Oh, he's Vincent in Advent Children. Yeah, I know Vincent shows up in this game from the trailer, but I haven't seen him yet, so.
Yeah, I know he's in the game.
So it might be him again. It could be him again.
My understanding is Sid and Vincent are in the game, but are not playable characters yet. And I think that Square Enix announced that.
Kind of like what they did with Red 13 with Remake, where like, here he is, but you can't use him yet.
Right.
But yeah, he's Steve Blum? Yeah, he's Vincent in Advent Children. I wouldn't be surprised if he's Vincent here too, because he has a perfect voice as Vincent. So I think that fits Jet, like you said, from Cowboy Bebop, kind of reminds me of Vincent in their like kind of swaggerish kind of looks. So I could see that's a good matchup.
Bo Billingsley is the guy that does Jet.
Wait, think about Spike?
Oh no, not Steve Blum, Spike. Okay, so yeah, Bo Billingsley plays Barrett in Dirge of Cerberus.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to remember, because I know, I wonder if he's also Barrett in Advent Children, because I in my head I know exactly how Barrett sounds like from Advent Children. And he sounds similar to the Barrett here in Rebirth and Remake, but you can tell they're different voice actors, but they have like the similar like gruffiness to their voice.
Yeah, okay, so Bo Billingsley also plays Barrett in Advent Children. Okay, so I was right about that.
And you say he's also a Jet in Cowboy Bebop?
Yep. The voice of Jet is also Barrett in...
I can see it. I'm trying to think, like, when's the last time I saw... I haven't seen Cowboy Bebop in, like, over a decade, and I'm trying to
really?
Remember, like... I'm trying to remember how I just that's all I remember from Cowboy. I remember like the end of the story because it was very sad, but like I'm trying to remember how Jet sounds, and I'm like, yeah, I guess he does kind of sound like Barrett, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and like Jet was always coded black, I felt like, so when they casted him as a black actor in the Netflix adaptation, yeah. I wasn't surprised. Yeah,
kind of like Piccolo, like, but, Piccolo.
Right, exactly.
We're still here at the scene of this terrible disaster, caused by a massive tornado which swept through sectors 0, 1, and 2. Amidst the wreckage of the expressway, search and rescue operations are already in progress.
Wow. Just look at it all. It's so green. Even after everything we've done to it, it's still going strong.
It may look that way, but in reality, it's barely hanging on.
I was wondering, what's Cloud been doing these past 5 years? Where's he been?
And you're asking me this?
This is gonna sound crazy, but as far as I know, Cloud was never in Nibelheim 5 years ago.
The life stream. It is the very essence of our star. The blood coursing through its planetary veins.
According to Hojo, they're connected to Sephiroth. Shadows of the Man, I believe he called them.
Sephiroth was in Midgard. We fought him. Whatever happened, he's alive.
But why come back now? After 5 years, doing who knows what?
Well now, think we woke it up.
Angered it, more like.
Feast your eyes on the Turk's latest and greatest. Elena.
She may be new, but she's still a Turk.
Say she's a monster, that she can peer inside you, into the very depths of your soul. that she can become those you hate, those you fear, those you love.
You
murdered my dad! You burned my village!
You know that I killed her. So, who is she?
But getting back on topic, with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, super impressed with the open world, super impressed with the additions to combat. I feel like there's more opportunities for grinding now than in this one.
Yes. You don't have to do the annoying chapter select anymore that you had to do in Remake, or at least I did.
Right. Yeah. And so you can kind of also just organically grind too with just exploring the open world. Like somebody in a Facebook group mentioned that they just like grinded the characters out to like, I don't know, like level 40 or something by repeatedly doing the combat sim. And I was just like, why would you do that? Because you can organically level them up and the characters not currently in your party still gain XP and AP even when they're in the back row. So like, you know, you could actually level up all of your characters at the same time, just walking around the world, fighting every enemy you see, you know, as you're completing the different objectives. And I really appreciated that grinding was something that could be less of a chore. It was just something that you do organically.
Yeah. When you're doing like the, early on, I could not beat the boss in the chapter 2 section, big snake. And so I was stuck and I was like, man, I'm already having trouble. And then I was like, all right, let me go do some more stuff. So I did more of those little activating those beacons and doing some more environmental stuff and just coming across the same like ogres and rats and all that over and over and over and over. And like, not even trying to fight them, but like I never ran away either. Just I would just come across them.
Right.
And so I'm like, I'm trying to do this objective. Okay, there's enemies between here and there. Like, oh sure, I'll fight them. And like without really trying, it was in the early section, it was easy to kind of over level a little bit because I was like my materia leveled up really quickly early on because I was just doing like non-combat related stuff. It caused me to come into combat as I was doing it. So just wandering around. I found that really cool, like, Moogle treehouse thing, and then I got just more enemies around there, and, like, just doing random stuff. And so by the point where I was, like, I filled it, because you know how you do more activities, like, these little yellow balls that fill in, right? Uh-huh. There's, like, this massive thing, this, like, bar for that region. And so like, I got about halfway full, and I was, like, okay, I think I've done enough already. And I went back to the boss, and it was, like, substantially easier time. So I'm, like, I've playing it on normal, I find, I don't know if for you playing it on dynamic, but, like, I feel like most bosses I will lose to at least once until I figure out what I'm supposed to do exactly.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And honestly, for me, like I almost always retry boss battles at least once because like I'll jump in, assess them, figure out what their weaknesses are, and then I'll retry, get my materia set up right.
Oh, okay. There you go.
And then fight the thing. I've been at a few spots where I had a tough time because, you know, all my characters were like critical health and whatnot. I mean, the summons always kick my ass, but most of the story I managed to just kind of scrape myself through. And I don't know if that's because of the dynamic leveling or not. If maybe there are some battles that are even a little bit easier because I don't know if the dynamic goes both ways and also jumps down to your level. But I turned it on because what I wanted it to do was to adjust based on how well I was playing the game. And so my hope is that as I play through and get better and better, it's going to get harder and harder. But so far, I haven't really felt too challenged yet. So we'll see. I know hard mode in Remake was a challenge. I started a playthrough of that, and I think the big thing with that is that you just don't regenerate MP. You have to rely on healing it with items and stuff, and so that actually makes that much more difficult, and you have to rely more on things like items and whatnot. Whereas right now, I'm like stocking up on potions, you know, especially because of the item transmutation system. I'm collecting so many materials that I'm able to transmute so many things. And then, like, I'm even getting to the point where, like, I have, like, so much of one material that it won't let me pick up more of it. So I have to go to the item transmuter and, like, make a few potions.
have you used the morph materia at all?
I have. There was a specific enemy once you get to, like, the Corel region that actually has, like, a weakness to morph. So I finally, like, tried it out then.
Oh, really? A weakness to morph. That's funny.
Yeah. So I kind of felt like I should, and, like, it would give me a powerful item. But most of the time when I looked to see what the morphable item was, like, it was just, like, another material. So I was like, I don't really need that. But
yeah, I wish they made morph more interesting, because I remember in the OG Final Fantasy VII, like, morph was really good for specific enemies where, like, I mean, it was, like, there was one enemy where it was, like, very game-breaking where you can morph this regular occurring enemy, like, later in the game, you can morph them into, like, a item that's a permanent, like, HP or attack boost. So you can just morph the same enemy over and over and over and just stack up all these, like, permanent stat boosts and just, like, I think it's, you find them during the third disc, so it's, like, you can't abuse it, you know, early mid-game. But towards the end, it's like a weird, like, Triceratops tank creature.
Yes!
And if you morph him, you morph him into, like, this item that's, like, a permanent attack stat boost. And it's so easy to morph him just because, like, the requirements or, like, the threshold for, like, doing that is, like, only, like, half HP or something. So, like, and I just remember doing that over and over and over. And it's, like, obviously they're not going to make it game-breaking here. But I was hoping there would be, like, rarer stuff or, like, I don't know, for, like, crafting, like, weapons or something. Because it's mostly just, like, health items and stuff that you can normally just buy. And, like,
yeah.
You know, there's certain accessories I think you can only get through, like, the transmutation, but, like, man, it'd be cool if they introduced, like, a synthesis style, like making better weapons or better versions of the same weapons you have or something like that. Like, that would give me more of a reason to seek out enemies and to morph them rather than just, you know, just indiscriminately kill them.
Right, and I remember in the original, like, you could morph new armor and accessories. I remember if you morph a Master Tonberry, you actually got a ribbon. So, like, as soon as you came across the Master Tonberry, you wanted to get those ribbons. And I think there was one enemy in the battle square that morphed into a ribbon too. Like, I remember I didn't really use morph a whole lot in the original because it doesn't tell you what you're gonna get. You kind of had to just experiment. Now, you know, you use the assessment material, it tells you what you're gonna get. But maybe, like, there are more, like, unique materials that I'm missing out on. And like, I'm just not paying attention. Because, like, I know, like, you can get more powerful, like, armor and accessories and whatnot. And you can even enhance the ones you have through the transmutation system. So.
Oh. Okay, because I see you can make the... Oh, you're right. Because I remember there was one accessory was, like, requires, like, a coral something. And it's like, oh, I already have one of those. But it was like a leather collar or leather bangle or something like that. And it was like, and like the name of the item was like enhanced, like, leather bangle. So you're right. I remember now. You're right. I thought for some reason I thought it didn't exist, but yeah.
You can at least, like, yeah, enhance the ones you have. I don't think there's any weapons though that you can just straight, like, morph or like item transmute. I think the weapons are a little bit more rare. I like that the way that Remake and Rebirth handles weapons, where, like, every weapon has a specific ability that's tied to it, so it encourages you to try out that weapon and that ability, and so,
like,
that
even if the stats aren't greatest, you're like, that's actually a very useful skill or something.
Yeah, it actually forces you to kind of try out these abilities so you can master them, so you can equip them to other weapons, and then you can go back to the one that you want, whether that's the one that has more materia slots or is a better fit for the way you're playing that character. Yeah, and I know they overhauled the weapon upgrade system too. Like, basically what was the weapon upgrade system in Remake is the Folio system in Rebirth.
Oh yeah, with the little, like, the little floating planet things or whatever, right? You're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, the little books, and, like, you can with the weapon upgrades, they have the little floating planets. And with those instead, like, they just offer, like, specific, like, buffs to that weapon, and then I think, like, as the weapon levels up, it automatically, like, gains stat ups and more abilities that you can add on, and more materia slots and whatnot. So, like Remake, you know, what I appreciate is that, like, the weapons that you get early game still can remain relevant throughout the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a an incentive to go back and try a different weapon, you know?
Yeah, because the stats, there's a good amount of the weapons you'll find later on that are like, oh, like, this is actually weaker than my starting weapon, but like, oh, but it has that one skill that's like really useful, so like, okay, I'll have to spend time with it. So yeah, they did a pretty good job balancing out situational weapons and stuff. There's not like one, at least as far as I've seen, there's not like one, you know, god tier, like, this is the weapon I'm gonna keep like for the rest of the game. Even in a remake, I remember I even went on my way to use the nail bat, which I thought was like a really silly weapon, but I went on my way just for the ability they had. I don't remember what it was, but I remember it was kind of useful. So like, I grinded like a lot of a good portion of the game with the nail bat just to get that one skill.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I was incentivized to do it with every weapon, but I remember the nail bat skill was actually pretty useful. And they brought back some of the same abilities in this game, but they added others, and I really appreciated like being able to try out new things. I feel like Aerith is actually a much better character in this game, more useful as a playable character than as just support.
I've used Aerith when I'm forced to use Aerith, but I'm trying to remember, like, I think she just has like the really high magic stat, and I just slap on a whole bunch of like elemental material on her. So I'm trying to remember, but she has like way more abilities than she did in the first one. But also, who I like using a lot is Red 13. I like to fill up his both of his ATB charges for that star ray or that stardust ray, whatever it's called. That really like heavy damaging move that he does. I was like, okay, like, that was really dope. But I don't think I've used Aerith. I usually stick to Tifa, Barret, and Cloud. Occasionally Red 13 I'll throw in there, but yeah, I need to spend more time with Aerith because I haven't really done that.
Yeah, and the limit breaks return from this game. Like, some of them return, and then they add some new ones as well. I think every character has up to 3 in this one, which is up from 2 in the last game and down from 4 in the original.
I only have Cloud's like second and Barret's second at this point.
Well, I think everybody's second is available from the start, but in order to unlock it, you have to use a synergy ability. So I think that is actually the only way to unlock the second. So the synergy abilities not only are powerful attacks that don't use an ATB charge, but they also offer like passive effects after you use them. So there's one that'll grant you like unlimited MP. There's one that will raise your limit levels. And then there's another one that I think offers stat buffs or something. I thought it was interesting that the limit breaks in this game were actually locked specifically behind using those synergy abilities.
That makes sense then, because I really thought I was just using cross slash over and over and over to get me like the next one, Ascension. I thought that's what it was, so that makes more sense actually, because it's just the characters that I actually use the most that have the second tier limits. So
I just randomly got it sometimes, and I didn't always understand why. Because I thought when it said it raised your limit levels, that just meant like it increases your limit bar or something. But no, it literally means
that's what I thought it did too. I saw the description of limit. I'm like, oh, it's going to fill up the limit bar like much faster or something.
It raises you to level 2. And then I think level 3 is unlocked through the folio or something once you get to a certain party level. There's a party level now,
mm-hmm.
which some abilities are locked behind, and that's cool. So as you perform more tasks, you know, you gain like overall party XP. Mentioned the bonds of friendship thing already. Like, every character has a specific bond, and I don't know if that actually has an effect in combat, like on the synergy skills or whatnot, but I know that using the synergy skills and abilities increases the bond.
Okay, so that's how you would probably get Yuffie filled in time for the date then, is if you just had Yuffie in your party and just grinded those synergy abilities.
Well, I think you only gain, your relationship only deepens the first time you use the skill or ability.
Oh, okay, so it's not repeatable then.
Yeah, but there's got to be a way to get her up before the date, because I'm pretty sure she's one of the options. She was in the OG. Yeah, I really like that. I haven't gotten to that part in the game, obviously, but I know that they did expand the date mechanic a little bit, and I'm actually really excited for that.
I haven't Just other than the date at the Golden Saucer, which is like the obvious, the obvious thing that that's really used for. I haven't seen that anything else because I have it. I have my Tifa and Barret are like my most like highest relationship level. I don't know why with Barret. I guess because I maybe always having a party or something's going on. But I have him and Tifa now. Where like the little smiley face is green now, which is like after the yellow one, I believe. So they.
Oh, you haven't gotten anybody to blue yet.
No, it starts off like what? It's okay. It starts off like what? Gray,
and then it goes to purple,
purple, and then yellow,
and then well, it's kind of like a lime, and then a green, and then a dark blue, and I think a light blue, but I haven't gotten there yet.
No, yeah, I only have the highest I have are Tifa and Barret, and they're both like at the same like section of like green.
I have Tifa up to blue specifically, but also every time there was a dialogue choice, I looked up to see what was the one that was going to get the most points. I'm not messing around.
Okay, yeah, I think early on when you're recounting what happened in Nibelheim, I think I said the wrong stuff multiple times. So like at one point, Tifa was my lowest, like at the beginning of the game, and so yeah, I had to like kind of. I didn't really work at it. It just naturally I just chose the right stuff, I guess, after that, where it was like, you went to my room, like, yeah, I play the piano and everything, and like that upsets her. And then if you search like, I think her like wardrobe or something, then you tell her that you did that too. That also like lowers it too.
Like, you asshole.
Yeah. They both say, yeah, yeah.
And you get to play the piano. I actually was having a blast with that. I tried it in the demo and then just getting into the game and just playing the piano. I was surprisingly better at that than I thought I would be.
I'm not very good at it, honestly. It's very similar to the guitar thing in Last of Us Part Two, where it's like the omnidirectional kind of like, you know, flick it that way, which is just like how it is in that game. And I wasn't good at it in that game. And I'm not good at it in this one either, where it's just like, because there's like a part where you can do it again during chapter 5, I'm sure you remember, or chapter 6, I think you remember that part where the you had to do a little piano performance, yeah. And I practiced, and I'm like, I'm never gonna get better than at this point. I think I was like, they gave me like a C or something, because I don't know if it was my controller, if it's an issue with my controller, but like, I think sometimes I would flick it too early, because as soon as I would see it, I would want to flick it already. And I had to like train my mind, like, no, wait till it gets to like the edge of the circle. Like, that's when you're supposed to flick it. And then using the right and the left just completely messed with me. So like, I was only able to do it with like the right sticks. Like, if I did the left one too, like, I don't know. It's like the patting your head, rubbing your belly kind of thing. You know, like, I would just mess up.
I had the most trouble when they would want you to do two sticks, because they would focus on one stick and then suddenly they'd bring in the other one. I'd be like, okay. But somehow I always managed to get an A every time, and I would mess up a couple times. I was surprisingly good at that and the Junon mini game.
Oh, that one's fun, because it's like the honeybee thing in Remake.
It's a carryover from the honeybee, but I don't remember if the honeybee actually had rapid tap and hold sections like the Junon one does.
I think it had hold, didn't it? I don't think it had the tapping one, but I think it did have a hold one.
Yeah, now that you mention it, I think I do remember the hold at least.
Did you set it so like it was all the hard ones like back to back to back, or how did you do it?
I did it the hardest way. Like, that was another thing. I kind of looked it up because I had heard that like this part of the game there was a way to deepen your relationships by doing well in the mini game. So I found out that like there's a particular way to arrange the formation so you get the most amount of points.
Yeah, I would say like you're like switching the Grenadier, and it's like, okay, now it's like the hard like sequence. Like, okay, so I just messed around. I just kept, because I got all 10. I got 10 out of 10, like all the different troops or whatever. It took me forever to find like the last one. It was like hidden like in a little corner somewhere. But
me too.
I got like the 10 out of 10, and it was just a matter of just flipping them around back and forth until I found the combination where it had like 3-star, 3-star, 3-star.
Yeah. Once I like started trying it out, it was actually fairly intuitive too. But I think you just have to just not have the security officers. Any combination that does that, and you had to have like two of them together to get the bonus.
Yeah, they had to be the same type, I think. Because I had Grenadier, and I think I had like the flamethrower one with the flamethrower one, and then I forgot what the last one was. Because there's going to be like one that's like the odd man out, because there's like 5, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a riot trooper, a Grenadier, and a flamethrower, I think.
That section is so fun. I love the whole
avoid
spoilers, but like, did you try to keep like your like keep them alive?
Yes.
Okay, I did too. And so, and you had like that whole like heartfelt like farewell at the moment. And yes. I'm like, why do I care about these guys? They're the enemy kind of thing. But like,
I know they even sort of hint that they do know, and they still have the other back.
Right. Yes. He's like, I'm just yeah. He's like art, and it's like kind of like it's kind of like unsaid, right? In a way, like they kind of just leave it at that. But it was. I was like, you guys believe in me. Like, I'm gonna keep you guys alive.
Yeah, I think specifically, I think you probably get that scene if you actually keep them all alive. That was now that I think about it, that was probably the prerequisite for that. Because I was really that gave me the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah, it does. like this is cool because I'm pretty sure that was, I don't remember that in the original, but like I'm pretty sure that's not a thing in the original. But like I like how like they're just kind of thrust on you, and you're like, okay, like I'm gonna make the best out of this situation, and it's like, oh man, like I really want them to make it. Like
it seemed like there was gonna be some sort of incentive for keeping them alive. Like the way they worded it was that like you could or could not keep them all alive. So I was like, okay, I gotta keep them alive.
Yeah, because the little menu pops up and tells you like, you know, like you can focus on their HP bars and stuff. Like, okay, I'm gonna do that. So
I was healing them and giving them potions. I was like.
I was like, I'm wasting my resources on you guys. Like, I better get something out of this.
But yeah, man, I think one of the last things I kind of wanted to hit on too was just like how like nostalgic it is. And I only played the original Final Fantasy VII, you know, maybe a couple of years ago, right? But even so, being able to like explore the same locations again in 3D, like when I got to Costa del Sol, I was like, holy shit, it looks like it just like it does in the game.
Right, just 3D-fied or whatever. Yeah, I felt that the most when I got to Junon. Even with like the dolphin and everything, and I'm like, oh, like, it's the same thing, just 3D now, just, you know, just modernized and stuff, and like the whole, you know, get the dolphin to boost you up to where you need to go to, like that kind of thing. The similar like the boss designs are just the exact same thing, just like way more up-res and, you know, remade. All the boss is the same, but for me it's mostly the music. It's those music cues that hit you that I'm like, oh, like I remember this track. Like when I'm in like the Shinra Mansion, like in the flashback, and like, like I remember this music.
It resonates, and you're like, oh my god! It unlocks. You're like, you don't even remember that you didn't even remember that song before you heard it again.
Right. Yeah.
You're like, yeah, but so, this is the song that plays here.
Yeah, it's just so many of those tracks that just come back, and like obviously the regular battle thing and the victory fanfare and all that. I also like how some of the tracks from the OG are used like whenever like certain characters have like cell phones and it'll ring and it'll be like the original score or the original track from like from the first game, and it's like the
theme.
Yeah, exactly. It's like someone's like little cell phone ring, and I'm like, I love that. I also love how they expand a lot of that. Just a lot of the characters have way more personality, like without going to spoilers, but just like the Turks themselves, like,
yes.
Wait, there's so much funnier like sequences are in now, and just certain boss battles with like certain funny characters. One in the desert, I'm sure you remember, with a certain Shinra executive, that it was just way more funnier than it is in the original. Like, it's just all these extra little moments that don't have to be there. Like, they were like, let's throw in a little more whimsy into like this segment or whatever. It's just like, it's awesome. I love, and even the sad stuff, dude, even the sad stuff is even sadder here. Again, talking about the desert section without going into details, like, oh my god, like I remember that in the OG like 7, but like, oh man, they made it way, way more tragic. We get warmer sad here.
Or when you're in the Nibelheim flashback and you're hearing, you know, a voice call for their mom, you know, and you're like, oh, it just really hits you. That was one thing that these games excel at. And also, I was going to bring up earlier just like the relationships between the characters. You know, we actually kind of get to see what it was like, you know, on the ground level. In the original, you know, you kind of just fought the battles, and then every once in a while a story section would come in and the characters would interact. But there wasn't as much of a feeling, like you kind of had to just imagine the bonds that were forming during the battles and whatnot. And here you actually get to see them. Their characters are talking to each other, you know, while you're running around and
yeah, the little idle chatter. Sometimes I'll just stop what I'm doing because I just want to hear the conversation play out. Like I don't want to trigger a cutscene too early and it gets cut off. Like I want to hear like every now, like certain characters, like whenever you do, even some of like the contextual like stuff, like you're already at this part, but like it's not a huge spoiler, but when like Yuffie leaves the chalk drawings to guide you through Mount and you see like the, like you'll see a character's face and then like an emotion. And okay, you have an idea of what happened here with that character.
Yes.
And it's almost like some kind of like, it's like, I'm trying to remember the term. But it's like, oh, environmental storytelling kind of thing. Where like, yeah, you're kind of just, you're following these little arrows, but each arrow has like a different member of the party member. Like there's, it's like one where like Tifa's like doing like a scolding. And then like you'll go to the next one, and it's like Barret's face crying next to the next arrow. Like it's just, it's like unnecessary, but it just adds something extra. It's like, it just makes it just much more enjoyable.
If you happen to, you know, like pay a little bit more attention. Yeah, exactly. I love that level of depth. Well, I guess we'll go ahead and get into our final thoughts here. Andrew, or at least your thoughts so far, first impressions of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
It's a long game. I'll tell you, that's a long game. No, yeah, I mean, a lot of people, I think when you think of games, especially definitely with movies, but when you hear about games being remade, a lot of people are like, I think the general gut reaction is like, does it need that? Like, is it necessary for, you know, X or Y game to be remade? Like, and because you'll see if you kind of take like a sample of like the general gaming audience today, like we see a lot of remakes, Resident Evil 4, Dead Space. We see a lot of Last of Us Part 2 or Last of Us, what was it, Part 1? Like
Last of Us Part 1, The Last of Us Part 2 remastered.
Yeah, and like a lot of gamers tend to ask, like, are these things necessary? And most of the time they're not really necessary, but like I would have never thought when they announced like, oh, like we're doing the Final Fantasy VII remake. I thought maybe it'd be like a few additions. I didn't think it'd be spread across three separate installments. I thought it was gonna be like just one game. And it's cool that by doing that, you're able to get so much more out of like the individual segments of the game where you have like in remake, like the original, we didn't know, like Jesse was just like a whatever character. And then in remake, they fleshed out Jesse into like her own separate, like, fully fleshed out,
yes,
her personality and even a backstory. Go to their parents' house. Like,
Jesse is best, like, girl.
Yeah. R.I.P. But like the, just being able to do so much more, or like there was things I was wondering, like how are they going to do like the honeybee section, like in modern, you know, modern times? Like, yeah, how's that going to work? And they make it work. They make it very tasteful and everything. And I'm like, wow. Like when I play that part, I'm like, okay, like. Cloud cross-dressing is like funny because in Final Fantasy VII, like when he does it, it's a little gag. It's kind of done as like a comedic relief because, you know, they're small chibi characters. And it's like, how is that going to translate to like a fully like scale, you know, characters and everything? And they make it work,
they,
right?
They made it work.
And so here with Rebirth, we're like, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna see what happens when we get to the dolphin section, because that's gonna be funny, I bet. And like, you get to the dolphin section, it's like, okay, that's, yeah, that would be the modern way of doing the dolphin section. Or like when you get to the gold saucer, it's like, how's that going to be, like, you know, in 3D and, like, you know, fully fleshed out? It's like, oh, like they nailed it. So like, I love how they're able to take things that we already expect from the original Final Fantasy VII and kind of just make them fit in a way it doesn't seem so awkward in retrospect, because in the original Final Fantasy VII, a lot of those things just seemed really weird. Like Hojo being at the Costa del Sol and just lounging,
yes,
sunbathing. And then here it's kind of like they add a little more context to what's going on with him being there, with the reason being there. And like, you know, like he's like promising these girls, like, oh yeah, like you could be like a research assistant or whatever. Like it kind of like, okay, like this is how we have to make it make sense in this modern recontextualization, right, of the game. So, the game being very long, obviously spread across three parts, allows us to have way more interaction, way more floor fleshing out. Like, we haven't even talked about like all the flashbacks and all the other stuff that there's so much more, and I'm sure like by the time I get to the end of the game, there's gonna be like way more like mind blown moments, and I can't wait for that. I just can't wait.
I know, man. Like, there's just so much to really talk about here. And at some point, I don't know, maybe when like the final game of the trilogy comes out,
Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I'll you know, probably want to go back through like and play all of them. Maybe, you know, we should just do like an episode on like redux on remake, do like a full spoiler episode on Rebirth, and then jump into whatever they call the new one. A lot of people say reunion, but it can't
that
be
makes
reunion,
the most sense,
but they already used it. Crisis Core.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so reunion seems like the obvious one. you know, especially with the hooded, the black hooded
guys. I get
guys.
Maybe Relevations, but I don't like Relevations. That's like a very played out. It's like when all the video games were using like X or somewhere in their subtitles. Like,
don't even get me started on Kingdom Hearts.
Oh God, yeah. That Kingdom Hearts is different though, because they really come up with the most nonsensical, like, yeah. There was a, or like the trend right now with a lot of shooters, it's fallen something, like, you know, there's like certain words that just show up. Everything's fall of something, fallen, fall of, like, there's a lot of falls. So like, yeah, I hope they, whatever part three is going to be, I hope it's not like something super simple like Revelations or
Revelations feels like too done. This is Nomura, the same mind behind Kingdom Hearts. So obviously they're not going to disappoint with the title. I'm really excited for it. And I'm really excited to finish this game and see what it does. Cause I was so excited for this. I mean, this is one of maybe my most anticipated game of this year, actually.
Yeah. Mine too. I've just been going so slowly at it. Cause I just been
same
occupied with life stuff. And it's like, oh, maybe I'll get a chance to play this. Like, I can get an hour in, and it's like, I really want to finish the game, but I'm like also at the time, like, but I don't want to rush it either. But like, I want to take advantage of the time I have. And it's just like trying to like balance that where I'm like, I'm doing less quests as I go. But if there's like Queen's Blood, like I'll do it. Like I won't rush that. So it's like a little bit of here, a little bit of there. I'll dabble in side stuff until I'm like, okay, I really need to make some like main story progress in here and that. So
yeah, you can sort of balance it. It's a game that really actually makes everything feel engaging, you know, and nothing really feels like a chore. And I honestly have liked all of the mini games I've played so far. So,
and this game is so heavy with the mini games.
Kero.
There's so many. Yeah, with the was it? There's like a part early on where you do like the little chocobo thing in the circuit to get you used to using the chocobo. And like, okay, like, all right, okay, that's enough. And then like later on, like the golden saucer, dude. So many mini. Some of them are really good though. Some of them are really good, but there's bound to be like one or two that just won't really connect with you. But that the whole section of that game is like supposed to be just like fun. It's supposed to be a theme park. So,
well, you know, like there's got to be mini games that don't resonate, and that was the same in the original. But the Moogle design leaves much to be desired.
Oh, those things look creepy. Yeah, I know. They look really creepy. I like the fat one. The fat one that Kate Schiff rides on, but I don't like the Ewok looking Moogles they have like in this game. They just look so I don't know.
That everything else is very accurate. I mean, like the Tonberries look like Tonberries, you know. But yeah, no, the Moogle design, yeah, no, Square, you fucked up on that. Those things are unsettling. But yeah, I mean, for my, you know, final thoughts, not really, more like first impressions, you know, like my thoughts so far on the game is that it's everything I had hoped for and more. I mean, it had an even more of an open world feel than I expected it to. And the original Final Fantasy VII had the illusion of an open world. It's a linear game, but
sure,
the way that the world map was accessed gave you the illusion of it. And so I just really kind of expected that. I kind of expected, you know, kind of do what you did with Final Fantasy XV, because I feel like at least like the open world aspects of that game were pretty well done. Although I haven't played very much of it. But like take something like that and apply it. And honestly, they did way better. They honestly did like a phenomenal job, you know, integrating that. And this is still a linear game, but I felt that it was much less linear than Remake. And that was really my only complaint about Remake, was that it was even more linear than the original game. But then again, it was just as linear as the Midgar section of the original
exactly game. Yeah.
So it worked. And so now that we're into, like, you know, the world, it, you know, kind of seeing more of this like open world nature. And I know like later on you can get the buggy, you know, there's chocobos obviously for every region, all with special abilities, you know. And I'm not anticipating that you're going to get the high wind in this one. I expect that they're going to save that for the next game.
Probably.
Along with Knights of the Round materia, which is not going to be nearly as broken. I mean, I remember in the original game, like, you could just break the game with the right materia setup. Like, Emerald and Ruby Weapon are like a cakewalk if you just have a good materia setup.
Yeah, like, Mime, Summon, yeah.
Yep. just equip Mime on your other two party members. Give Cloud Knights of the Round with HP Absorb, and you're golden.
The 3x summon, whatever the material was, or something like that.
Yeah. And, like, you could just grind out and just get, like, a like multiple Knights of the Round. Yeah, there was just ways that you could break the game. And then, like, some of the ultimate weapons had, like, multipliers based on things. So you could just literally break the game with the combat multipliers. This one is a lot more grounded than that. You know, they don't they allow you to stay within certain constraints, but it's exactly the experience that I would have expected out of Final Fantasy VII in a modern era. And no, it's not exactly the same. In fact, I wouldn't even call these two games a remake of the game.
No.
Despite the fact that it's called Remake, Final Fantasy VII Remake was not one. It was more of a reimagining.
Yeah, it's like a parallel kind of... these games both exist like in parallel to each other.
It's kind of an alternate timeline sequel. It's kind of like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek films, which are technically reboots. But
yeah,
there's like
that's a good example. Yeah,
there's a continuity reason. Obviously, they, as far as I've gotten, that hasn't really been explained yet. But I remember that, you know, they teased the existence of like alternate timelines and the fact that like Aerith actually has like knowledge of the original timeline and things are starting to change here. And so how far they'll change, I'll see by the time I finish this game. And that's what I'm most excited for, you know. But Andrew, why don't we let our guests know where you can find your podcast?
Sure. You can find the Duo Sense podcast. That's what we're called. DUOSENSE. Every week or so, we talk about the game, latest in gaming news, what we've been playing. It's mostly just talking about just video game related stuff. Well, it's the biggest thing going on in games at that time. And, what's how we've been tackling our backlog. And sometimes we'll do like little video game trivia sections, but, that's basically it. And, I also, how I met you actually was through, GNN, which is a geeknewsnow.net. That's a website that I write for. I mostly write about, Star Wars and video games. Those are the main two subjects I write about. So, I did an article about the reaction to the Acolyte trailer. I don't know if you've seen it by any chance, actually, but if you guys are interested in Star Wars, you can check that out. Again, that's geeknewsnow.net.
And as for Collateral Gaming, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. So by now we should have out part 2 on The Witcher 3. And then what's coming up next for us will be part 2 of our anniversary special on Fable 2. And then next month is April, so that's going to be our bad game month. I believe we are doing E.T. the Extraterrestrial and
oh God.
Plumbers Don't Wear Ties.
Why does that game sound familiar? Plumbers Don't. That's a new game, right?
No, it's older. Kind of more of like a interactive story than it is a video game.
I've heard that like very recently. I've heard that name very recently.
And no, plumbers do not wear ties.
Fable 2, man. I haven't played Fable 2 since, what, like 2010, 2011? It's been a long time since I played Fable 2.
Been a few years for me. We did part 1 on Fable 1. And so part 2 of our anniversary special is going to be Fable 2. It'll be my chance to revisit the game. Because I played a little bit of it the other day, but other than that, the last time I played it was before I was podcasting, and the last time I played it before that was probably around the time you did. And so, yeah, our 420 special, I think we're going to do Pepsi Man. So
is that the... Wait, no. Is that the one with the little red circle with the feet and the hands, or no?
It's basically just an endless runner.
Okay, never mind. I think I'm thinking of a different one.
I don't know what we're going to talk about for an hour, but...
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking of the 7-Up one. There's like a 7-Up one for like Super Nintendo or something. It's like a little red circle or something like that. I forgot. It's been a long time.
And then in May, we should be doing the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles. And then we should also have out our...
Objection.
Objection. Yes. Fucking love Ace Attorney. It is my shit.
I have the trilogy on Switch, but I've only finished the first one though. I've been meaning to play the other ones.
We did an episode on the Phoenix Wright trilogy.
And then when the Apollo Justice Trilogy just came out, that was the other game that I was heavily anticipating this year. We did a game launch review on that. And then we're going to do a proper two-part episode on The Great Ace Attorney Chronicles, which are honestly, like, in my opinion, next to the original trilogy in terms of, like, quality.
That's, like, the ones, like, set, like, in the Meiji era, yes. Right? In the 1800s? Okay.
Yep. During the Meiji era / Victorian era. Well, I say that because most of it takes place in London, actually. And you play as Phoenix Wright's ancestor, which is, it's really cool. And
also a lawyer.
Yeah, but not one that was actually, like, he wasn't originally intending to be a lawyer. He kind of just happened upon it, which is cool. But
Okay. It's in his blood.
And yeah, we should also have our episode, our two-part episode out on Nightfire. Yeah, sometime between May and June. And we kind of got out of order with everything, so I'll probably have to restructure the schedule here. But yep, that is what's coming up next. We're kind of at the home run of the season now, so very soon here we'll be planning out season 7 of Collateral Gaming. We've been doing this for a while, and it's been a lot of fun. And also check out our Patreon. We have exclusive Let's Play video game commentaries there. If you donate any amount of money. And as soon as I can get a capture card, I'll get working on making more. Bo is also releasing Collateral Let's Plays at least once a week on YouTube, so go check that out. I think multiple times a week. And I'll have those uploaded to the Collateral Gaming channel as well, but for right now, they're on the Collateral Cinema channel. Also, stay tuned for more from Collateral Cinema. We should have out by now our episode on Lost Highway, and then we're doing the last Naruto the movie. We just recorded that a few days ago. And then on the Collateral Gaming side, we're going to cover Naruto x Boruto Ultimate Ninja Storm Connections. So a lot of content, and hopefully if we get that all up quickly, we can start planning for the next season. But Andrew, man, thanks for being on. It was great talking about this absolutely stunning game with you.
Thanks for having me again, man. I'm happy that you invited me back, and hopefully again in the future for another game. So thanks. I had a lot of fun talking with you.
Hell yeah, man. All right. Well, we'll have social links in the show notes. So with that all being said, I've been Ashley Chancellor.
And I've been Andrew Orozco.
This is Collateral Gaming. We are out.
Peace.
Collateral Gaming is a Collateral Media podcast. All music and game clips are owned by their respective creators and are used for educational purposes only. Please don't sue us. We're poor.